Hello, 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 and welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience of Grind podcast. I'm your lovable, affable host, Kyle, joined by the always lovely
Ryan Demarest. Thank you.
You know, this is the Experience Grind podcast. I've said it before. I'll keep saying it again. What we do here, we experience different things. And in case we don't like those things, we're going to grind them out and try to experience as much of that media as possible. Spoilers, next week episode will be very good because of that. So please be sure, follow us on iTunes, subscribe to us there. Mm-hmm. Find us on the internet. We are experiencegrind.com.
And leave a review.
Yes, leave a review. 5-star reviews.
Or 1-stars. That's fine,
whatever
too.
You feel. Also, give us advice or tips on what you want us to experience media-wise. Movies, games. Let us know. We will grind that out, we promise you. And give you our honest opinions on it.
Yeah.
That's what we do. I mean, we're nothing but nerds that complain.
Well, yeah, and
or
fawn.
Admire.
Yeah, I'd say there's a lot of fawning over and
a lot of the stuff we've chosen lately. Yes, I agree.
It seems like there's a pretty clear pattern. Like anytime we do a game episode, it's a lot of complaining, and then the movies are just like, "Oh, I fucking love this. This has been really good."
Yeah. That is true. That's the way it runs. So this is episode 5. Am I right in that?
I think it is.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, this is episode 5. The number 4 movies.
Yeah.
I chose for my movie Drive, the Ryan Gosling, Nicholas Winding Refn, however you say that dude's last name.
I think that's as good as the pronunciation as it's going to happen.
And you chose?
The Incredibles.
Yes.
Brad Bird. Superhero flick. Best Fantastic Four movie that has ever been made.
One of my first notes that we will immediately knock out of the park, because it's not true. I was like, I can't believe this is the only comic book movie that you chose. And then I was like, wait.
Scott Pilgrim's in there.
I've got Scott Pilgrim. Right next.
It is the superhero movie I chose over Avengers, over Dark Knight, over any other
which
one.
Which surprised me, and we'll get into that.
Yes.
But before we do that, one of the things we like to do here is talk a little bit, try to give you a taste of who we are. One thing that I like about Ryan and myself is that as big of nerds as we are, mm-hmm. We've both had somewhat of jobs in the movie industry. Now, that sounds a lot fancier than what it was. Ryan was the manager of a video store.
I was a fluffer on a set one time.
Very Tarantino-esque.
I was. That's a good reference.
I would imagine you'd be as angry as him.
I was.
Working at a movie theater, dealing with people that just want to rent.
That's how I justified my sad existence in the video store was, Tarantino did it, so it can't be that
bad.
Yeah,
exactly.
But, angry experiences. Well,
it doesn't have to be angry. I want your best story, and it can be whatever you want. And I don't know if you know this about me, but my similar one, when I was 16, my very, very first job in this entire world was at a movie theater.
Okay. I wish I could have worked at a movie theater. Dude, that's what I wanted, and then I settled for video store.
It was the best job a 16-year-old kid can have, man.
Yeah.
I will tell you that. And I did it all. I ran tickets, I ran concessions, I ran projection.
You get to go see the movies after the theater closes, right? You just bring your own cups.
Before it would even open up that weekend, we'd have our own special staff viewings on a Thursday night. Those were always good times. There's some stories. And I think we should revisit this for the movie. Yeah, because, I know I've got stories. I know you've got to have more than just one. But let's start off with a bang. Let's get what your opinion is, the best one related to your experience.
I know some of the best stories I have nothing to do with customers and me just usurping the man, because I took up the video store position when I was in college and not really caring about my job as much as I should, and somehow that led me to being a manager, which led me to not caring even more because I had more power to not care.
Similar to most managers, all the apathetic ones get all the promotions.
In retail, I think it's
weird
just
how that works.
Yeah, it's expected at that point. I had one customer who came in who was very high-minded, and this is in Bloomington, so of course you have two extremes. You either have very high-minded, artsy customers coming in looking for beasts of the... Oh my God, I can't even think of that name.
Southern
that
Wild? Fucking...
Thank you, Beast of the Southern Wild.
I got your back, bro. That's why we do this.
Yes. Or you have it was, if you heard the audible clap. Or you have people coming in looking for Zookeeper and Paul Blart Mall Cop 2. It is, there's no middle ground. It is high art or shit. And I'm sorry for the Kevin James fans, but he's shit and his movies are shit.
Don't apologize to them.
And also Adam Sandler movies are shit too, even though Punch Drunk Love is good.
Yes.
All right. But I had this guy come in. He had like really great taste. And he'd just come in and like recommend movies to me. I'd recommend back. And he'd come in sometimes and just like give me like Blu-rays and DVDs from his own collection. He's like, have you seen this? This is really good. And we do the same back. And it's those kind of experiences that really made the video store personable.
Okay.
And it helped me get through. Was just like the very cool, open customers who wanted your opinion. Because like 90% of it was like, have you seen Zookeeper? No, I haven't, because it doesn't really interest me. Oh, that's not helpful. I'm going to rent it anyway.
Or imagine very much like Randall from Clerks running the video store. Like,
yes.
That's the way I always picture you.
Yeah, no, it was when I was in college, when I was the manager up in Bloomington, I kind of had a ease off on that because there were a lot of repercussions. If I didn't, I'd get calls from customers who'd call the district manager, then I'd get in trouble. But I had to back off on that. I couldn't be as angry and full of vitriol as I used to be. So I had to lie a bunch. And I'm glad I got out of that story before Amazing Spider-Man 2 came on DVD, because I don't think I could have fucking lied to any customer for that
really
piece of shit.
Well, I would never hope that you would have
so
to
angry
lie. That sucks.
I had to lie quite a bit.
Oh, man.
Or it'd be like a Michael Bay movie. What, Pain and Gain was the last one that came out. People were just like, what'd you think of this? It seemed like he was really trying this time. And like, you have to find like the silver lining in the shit cloud. But yeah, it's a lot of bending the truth and not, you don't have to lie, but you have to find a positive.
So you think that was more because you were in the corporate?
It's not Marky Mark's worst movie.
Because of the fact that you were in a chain video store, that was the way that went. Like, if you were in more of an independent run,
yeah,
would you have been more?
I think
Randall-esque?
So.
Yeah,
just I think like, so. I think you'd have more free range.
Get out of here with this,
yeah,
trailer. Like very much like a Jack Black in High Fidelity.
Yeah, you were never allowed to really fully give your opinion if it was negative. You'd always have to find a positive. You
so
could not say a negative thing.
Very similar to how you were on the movie review site. They didn't let you have...
Yes, which is why I left.
Yeah,
because I
exactly
could not be negative. And
yeah,
sometimes the movies just aren't good. And you have to be negative.
I want that negative, dog. That's what I want.
Yeah.
I
well, you're going to get a little bit. You're going to get a little bit tonight.
Okay.
A little bit.
I don't think you honestly will. Spoilers.
We'll see. So what about you? What about an experience you had in the movie theater that...
I had many experiences in the movie theater. Like I said, I was 16. Mm-hmm. I worked there for a year. There were a lot of great times in that theater. The best part about being a kid working at a movie theater is that, you know, people don't see movies every hour of the day. They're like 5, 7.
Yeah.
So after the big rush of people comes in, you got like an hour and a half to do whatever. Played a lot of Tekken 2 on the arcade, I'll tell you that.
Hey.
But the story I want to tell tonight, I guess... I was an usher, and the usher is the guy that cleans up the theaters after people leave, because human beings are incredibly filthy creatures.
Yes.
By habit, they leave garbage everywhere. But I didn't mind, because I could listen to music while I did that. I zoned a lot of people out. And I was taking the trash out one night during the movie, run, session, whatever it was, and the dumpster is, of course, located away from the building, so I'm walking it out there. And I noticed that there's a truck parked next to the dumpster, which is very weird because that's not a parking spot. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's secluded. It's away. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Naive 16-year-old. So I go up and I knock on the window and I'm like, I think there's something wrong because I'm dumb. And of course, I hear a guy that's like, what the fuck are you doing? And I see a lady's head pop up
there
from his crotch.
Are.
I totally cock-blocked this dude trying to get a Hummer in our parking lot. And I was so incredibly embarrassed because at this time in my life, I didn't even admit that I masturbated. Even though, you know, I'm 16. Dude, every 16-year-old kid just jerks it constantly.
Yeah.
But if people ask me at school, I was like, what? No. God,
I still don't admit it.
Oh, no. That's a good tactic.
I don't do that.
I totally just admit it to
I'm
the entire
that.
World. You know, but So that was mine. I totally stumbled on a dude and cock blocked him. I can't remember what movie was playing. The only movie I remember really coming out in my time there was Hannibal, the sequel to Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
I remember that being very popular.
Really?
Yeah.
That's surprising.
It was, for the first 2 weekends, that place was packed.
Huh.
But this was before the internet and before you could get, everything was still word of mouth.
Yeah, I don't think it's like a bad movie, but I just don't understand the big appeal. Yeah. But I guess maybe there wasn't another movie that came out after Silence of the Lambs. Like, that was the follow-up, right?
Yeah, that was the sequel. Okay,
and that's a critically acclaimed movie. I can kind of see that then.
And it had been a long time. I think Silence of the Lambs was like 86?
I think it was late 80s, early 90s for sure.
And then, you know, Hannibal wasn't till I think I was like 2001.
That sounds about right.
Sometime around there, so.
Fact check.
Yeah. Call us out on it. So, that's my story.
That's a good one.
I'm a cock blocker, even from a young age.
Found a Hummer in the parking lot.
That's what I do.
More entertaining than Hannibal.
A hand job would be more entertaining than Hannibal.
Just catching somebody else giving a hand job would be even more entertaining than Hannibal.
And it was. I got great joy at it.
There you go.
I think I went in and played more Tekken 2.
That's
There was this fucking girl that worked there, by the way. Of course, she used Eddie Gordo. I did not see her lose a goddamn time. The entire year and a half I worked at that theater.
That's who I use, Eddie and Christy, when she came out.
Eddie guy.
God. Eddie and Christy.
How are we going to play Tekken?
Flip around and kick and just spam the shit out of it.
Damn.
Yep.
Damn. I'm hurt a little inside now.
Sorry. I find an attack that works and then spam the shit out of it.
That's what all good fighters do.
Is it? I mean, I think it's what weak fighters do.
No, man. Like the, I watch a lot of MMA fights and a lot of boxing. The best boxers have... Or the best fighters generally have like their three moves that they do really fucking well. And they use the entire fight trying to get into having that move connect. Because once that goes, that's what you got.
That makes sense.
You know, a lot of your famous fighters like Chuck Liddell, he was famous for that overhand right. He would make guys move to the right so they'd be walking into that constantly. That's all he did.
Yeah.
But the dude got super rich and famous off of that. Happens to a lot of fighters. Mike Tyson, if you ever watch... His number one combo, he throws a right to the gut, right to the face, right hook, boom.
Nice.
They're so lightning fast, but damn.
Look out for Kyle's MMA podcast coming really soon.
Probably not. I tried to, I think I mentioned this last episode. I tried to write for an MMA website. It did not go well.
I don't know if it was on the episode or it was an outtake, but yeah.
Yeah. I like it. I like to talk about it. I don't like to write about it.
Well, then you can talk about it on a podcast coming soon.
Maybe. We'll see.
Copyright. Ryan Demarest. I own it.
He's taking all the money.
I am.
So let's get into this movie list, man.
Yes.
I think you're up first through our rotation.
I think I am. So.
Which is good. We'll just get really dark and then come out happy. I like the way that's going.
That's actually probably better. And on a high, happy note. Yeah. Not high. I won't say high. I won't sway it, but happy.
Okay.
All right. So Kyle's number four pick was the movie Drive. Which was 2011, Ryan Gosling, directed by Nicholas Winding Refn. I don't know what else to say about this. I think you should go first, kind of describe your history with it, and then I'm going to tear you down.
Fair enough. I think this movie was a big departure for Ryan Gosling. It brought him more into the serious role, let him really show off. I like that about it, because before this, I'd really known him only for sort of chick flicky things, and...
Say his big one before this was in The Notebook.
Absolutely. I think that still probably is his biggest movie to date.
Yeah.
Funny fact, he got the role in The Notebook because the director wanted somebody not very pretty looking.
It was Ryan Gosling, huh?
Exactly. Like, what are you talking about?
I see him. I see pretty boy.
Yeah, straight dude here. Yeah. Ryan Gosling is a gorgeous man.
Yeah.
So I don't know what was going on there, but that's what I've always heard. So my exposure to this movie, the first two times I saw it was on an airplane. I watched it.
Yeah.
Loved it so much, I immediately watched it again. I loved it that much. I'd heard some things about it, and this was just one of those movies that hooked me, man.
Yeah.
I loved every second of this movie. Everything seemed to flow really well for me. The music set a really crazy, weird tone. It has that... You don't really know what year the movie's taking place in. I think the music really adds to that.
Yeah, I don't think you ever see a cell phone or any kind of technology that would place it outside of a certain place. Yeah. People talk on like landlines usually. It's and then like the soundtrack's very 80s, very retro, very almost 80s. Like Carpenter, John Carpenter
type very, of thing. It's also it reminds me a lot of Hotline Miami.
Yes.
I don't know if you've ever played that game.
I have not, but I am familiar with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The soundtrack's very it's synth pop, I believe is the term. So Ryan Gosling plays a getaway driver who is a...
Who has no name at any point. He is just the driver.
He wears the coolest jacket of all time.
Which is a scorpion.
It has a... It's a... Like a... I don't know what the type... It's like a workout jacket. Like
I think like it's a little bit more. It's like a white pleated jacket.
Yeah,
with,
but it's not thick.
It's like a trainer jacket almost. Trainer. That's what it is. It's a white trainer
but
jacket.
But not a track jacket.
Yeah.
It's like a baseball team jacket. Thing.
It's like a varsity jacket almost. It's that kind of build and cut.
But
and,
he's got this giant yellow scorpion on the back. And he doesn't say anything in like the first 15 minutes of the movie outside of a voiceover explaining.
I took notes. The movie is 96 minutes long. 10 minutes and 30 seconds until the title card comes. And he only has two lines in which he's talking on the phone in those 10 and a half minutes.
Even
two lines.
Through the entire movie, Ryan Gosling speaks very little in this movie.
Yes.
He's very, he expresses a lot more just through the actions that he takes part in. And his character is very socially awkward.
All right. Great. Jumping on point.
Yeah.
So I've only seen Drive once before. And I loved it. I walked away. Absolutely loved it. I was kind of confused when anybody didn't and they had issues with it. I was like, it must be because of the slow pace. And it is very...
It's a slow burn. It takes a bit to get there.
Yeah, it is very intended in its pacing. And I think that's a good thing for it. But seeing it the second time, I noticed, I think the person who I am least impressed with is Ryan Gosling.
Really?
Yes. Because he's just surrounded with like fucking stars
in
this
is.
Movie. It is. So like it's nothing against him because like the rest of the cast is just A pluses all around. But I had a question. Is Ryan Gosling a badass in this movie or is he autistic? Because it's a very fine line and I think he might have a form of Asperger's. Like it's really weird and he is very disconnected.
He is very
and the movie really tries to show you how disconnected he is in the cinematography.
When you see his apartment, there's nothing in that apartment but that table that he sits at to work at that car transmission on.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Or I think it's like an engine block, something. He's working on a car piece. He doesn't have posters. He's got
nothing.
He doesn't have. He's got like one light above the table to see what he's doing.
There's no human touches.
No,
at
he's
all.
He's very mechanical.
He is.
Which is it's against something I like. I think me personally, Ryan Gosling is my favorite character in this movie, and I think I never really picked up on an autistic or Asperger's syndrome. I
did this time.
I might have. That might be something I when I rewatch it, I will look for. To me, it was more.
He's very soft spoken. And when he's not monotone, but he always delivers the same exact pitch and delivery no matter what. Even when he's like upset and his fist is shaking, he's delivering the same kind of disconnected tone. And then like when he responds to people, it is very just disconnected. It has nothing to do with what was said before.
Speaking wise, in his physical mannerisms, there's an intensity, especially a lot of these scenes. My favorite scene in this entire movie, I've said it last time, is when he's sitting at the diner and he's just having his coffee and some dude that he's a mercenary, for lack of a better word. People come to him just because they need a getaway driver for a certain job.
They had worked with him previously.
And so he doesn't work with repeat people. He likes to keep safe. And he's very smart about what he does. He's also, by day, a Hollywood stunt driver.
Yes.
So he's very good with cars. His best friend is Bryan Cranston right at the very beginning of his Walter White series. Because he had the mustache in this movie, did he? Or did he not?
I don't think he does.
I can't remember now.
No, I can't remember either, but I think he did.
But he plays a cripple guy.
He had his pelvis crushed in.
By
by Albert Brooks.
Was it
Ron Perlman?
Yeah, it was Ron Perlman that did it and enjoyed it and laughs about it and jokes about it to this day, which is another thing that sets Driver off and makes him kill him later. Spoilers. We should have said
I didn't piece that together that Nino was the one who did it.
Yeah, Nino's the one that... They talk about it later because at one point, I think Nino even asks him or asks Driver, how's the leg?
Okay.
Because Nino's the one that did it.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, there's a little...
All right, good.
It's little things like that that make me love this movie that I didn't pick up on the first time.
Oh, no, it's all very connected. And, like, you're introduced to four or five players... And everything revolves around them. Yeah. Like, you don't really get, like, these weird characters that come in just for the sake of plot. It is just all these five characters. And that's a very cool thing.
But we're getting back to my... I totally went off on a tangent. I love the part where he's sitting at the diner, and a guy that he'd previously driven for comes up and tries to talk to him. And Driver...
Just talking.
Driver wanting to be very safe, and, you know, he likes to keep his things separately. He's very smart in that aspect. The guy starts talking to him in public, and Driver doesn't acknowledge him, tries to ignore him, and when he keeps talking, he turns around and he's like, I can't remember it exactly, but he's like, how about you fucking turn around and leave right now before I kick your fucking teeth down your throat?
I think that's pretty much it.
And the guy's just like, okay, man, and just fucking walk. But like, I totally butchered that delivery, but the way he does it and that intensity in his
eyes, had
man.
Too much emotion, whereas you have to be like, oh, fuck you. You walk away, or I'll kick your fucking teeth
in. It is nowhere like that. He's
like
shaking.
It is like that.
No, it's not.
He's shaking because, like, he is angry, but he doesn't know how to express it because he has a mental block.
He's also trying not to make a scene in the middle of this packed diner at, like, lunchtime.
Walk away. I'll kick your fucking teeth in.
Yeah. He's like, get the fuck away right now. It's like through gritted teeth is the way I interpret it.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think if you go back. Watch this movie again.
I plan to,
and now that I've implanted this little seed, you'll see it. Because I saw that scene as like, wow, that was unreasonably harsh. And that is his delivery for almost everything. Like later on, like Carey Mulligan plays the love interest. And right before, I think I talked about the elevator scene when we were talking about the top five that came up. And I love that elevator scene. But right before, you find out the driver... is a little bit responsible for getting the husband killed. Carey Mulligan's husband killed. He was the driver. The hit went wrong and the husband died. So he's delivering this news to the wife and then says pretty much like, well, it's my fault. I was responsible in this. I killed your husband. He gets smacked. Then he says, I got money. Do you want to run away with me? And it's just like these disconnected things. It makes me think he's mentally unstable. And looking at it the second time, I'm like, this guy's not a role model. This guy's not a badass. I think he's a very simple man.
See, I didn't see it ever as simple. I can see where you're coming from with it. But my interpretation personally was that he was always disconnected.
And that could be it, too.
They don't tell you what you just come in. This is the driver. They show you. He drives. What I have noticed, especially with Driver, whatever he is involved in, he is very involved in. He dies, and I could kind of see maybe the autistic thing there because cars. He is incredibly involved in the cars, the car engines, the way they work, and he's very disconnected from everything around him until Carey Mulligan's character comes in, and then he really. It's very little things, but he starts to open up. He warms up. He's watching cartoons with the kid, and you see him smile.
Is that a bad guy?
Yeah.
How do you know he's a bad guy?
Because he's wearing the black.
It's those deliveries, though, that really makes it, like, I think it's questionable. And it's not, like, that's not a negative, because, like, hell, I might even like the movie better if this guy is autistic and he's, like, doing all this stuff, like, fucking kudos to you, Ryan Gosling. Like, I'm even more into your character now. But, like, I just think it's a very interesting thing I noticed this time. Like, he might be, I think that the PC way is to say he's on the spectrum. And I don't know if that's the PC way at all to say it. But
again,
I think it's more interesting. Watch again.
Me, I always just took him as disconnected.
Yes.
He doesn't like anything in this world. He has no reason to. The things he likes is cars. He likes Bryan Cranston's character, so they get along well. They have a good... They don't communicate well, but he understands how... He calls him the kid, how he works, what he needs, things like that. He gets what he needs from him. But there's a respect there.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And then Albert Brooks' character comes in.
Albert Brooks' character. He is, going back the second time, he is my favorite character in the movie by far. He is fantastic. Yeah, but more than Bryan Cranston, Carey Mulligan, Ryan Gosling, I think he is the best.
Did you notice he does not have eyebrows?
I did, but I thought maybe it was just thinning because he was old.
He shaved him for this movie to make himself look just weirder.
Huh.
Make himself stand. He wanted to do it. He's like,
it's an interesting choice. I don't think really swayed me one way or the other.
I think he was. He did it to show his character as also having a bit of a disconnect from humanity. Because it's not a human-esque. With eyebrows are a big part. They show a lot of emotion, and by removing those,
it's why I don't trust Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, right.
I can't. Cannot.
You should not trust her just because of Theodore Rex.
Oh, I was gonna go with Eddie.
I've never seen Eddie. I've seen Theodore Rex.
It's equally dog shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's Whoopi Goldberg. Come on. It's not going to be good.
Yeah, wow. That's fair.
But so he shows up, and he's sort of the crime boss of this area. He's not the overall boss.
No, because they talk about the mob family that's above them all. Yeah. He works for another guy.
But in this area that this movie takes place in, which it's like Hollywood, California, all out there, he runs this aspect of it.
Yeah.
And is Nino underneath him, or are they?
Nino is underneath him.
But he's like his next in line, right?
I don't know if he's the next in line, but he is underneath Albert Brooks for sure. I don't.
And they're good friends. They've been together for a long time.
Oh, him. Well, I don't know if Nino and Bryan Cranston are good friends, but he's also good friend. Albert Brooks is very good friends with Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, which makes his parts later pretty rough.
Sad. Yeah. That's one also, like, I love that scene, and I love in any movie where you have like the honorable death, because Albert Brooks comes to him and it's not like mean or threatening. He's like, I'm sorry I had to come to this. You were like, great, we were gonna have this stock car, like, I really thought this was gonna work.
I wanted to see my name on that stock car.
Yeah. And then spoiler alert, because we told you guys last week there's gonna be spoilers no matter what. He slits Bryan Cranston's arm from like the elbow to
all the way to
wrist.
The wrist. Just gets it all.
And holds him and he says, "Don't worry, there's gonna be no pain. It's done. It's done. Just go."
It's so
and it's sad and it's heartbreaking.
Harsh.
It's harsh, but it's not. It's also very gentle and like caring. And I love deaths like that.
But it sucks.
The gentleman death
that he had to do it too, because the only. It's all because of one guy.
It's because of Ron Perlman.
Yeah.
It's because of Nino.
He has to clean up Nino's messes.
Yes.
And it's so fucked up, dude. Because they are good friends. And
they are.
The fact that he has to do it.
But that's, like I said, like Albert Brooks up until that point has showed like nothing but kind of integrity in the death. So like later on when him and the driver meet and he kind of like, backstabs the driver a little bit.
Oh,
like
backstabs. He stabs the shit out of him.
Yeah, but he like it's like he turns away and that's when he goes for the stab. Yeah, it's like exactly. That seems a little bit out of character because everything up to this point has shown like you've been very honorable.
I think he's scared of driver though. That's why that
maybe.
Went down that way.
Maybe.
He sees, you know,
he sees nothing in those dead eyes.
Well, that he knows that driver kills Nino in retaliation. He fucking wrecks him off of into the beachfront, drags him out, and just drowns him in the ocean. By the way, for a movie called Drive, very little driving in this movie.
I agree and disagree. I think driving is a big part of this movie.
There's a lot. When it happens, it's really good.
Yeah. One, he's a getaway driver. Yes. He is a stunt driver. So there's already that. But like the first 10 minutes are him doing a getaway drive. Then there's another getaway drive in the movie. Then there's when he goes and hunts down Nino, Ron Perlman. He drives the car and stalks him in the night and then pushes him off the cliff. So I think there's a lot of car and driving in this movie.
I like one of the things I really liked and immediately hooked me is when he takes the Impala back to Bryan Cranston character. Or at some point it's revealed that this Impala, there's more to it than meets the eye. It's been souped up. But it looks like a regular Impala to blend in.
Yes.
With everything else. But it's got a lot of things under the hood that the Bryan Cranston character has added. Who is the head of these stunt drivers. He makes the cars. He gets them in shape. He does all that. So I really like that, too. It showed me. It was the way I took it is that, you know, the car is very similar to the driver in that, you know, there's more under there than what you're seeing. And that's my interpretation. I know you disagree.
That's
with
a good
me
now. Yeah, that's a good interpretation. I disagree. I don't think there's a lot more under
it takes
Ryan Gosling's.
It takes something to bring out what it has underneath the hood. It mm-hmm. takes the skill of the driver for that, or it takes the female love to bring it out of him later on. And
sure,
I hate you know, we both are big saps. We've discussed that.
Mm-hmm.
But I hate forced love interest in a movie.
Yes.
I don't feel that in this movie.
I don't feel that either.
I think it's very genuine.
Yeah.
I think they have a very real chemistry in this movie. As distant and guarded as he is, he does warm up.
I would say he has more of a chemistry with the kid than her.
Which is great. And yeah. That's really hard to capture, too. Even in film, kid actors are awful. And yeah, I think it's he doesn't really do a lot in the movie.
I think his name is Benicio in the movie. Yeah.
But Ryan Gosling, he does act very well with the kid.
He does.
I don't know, man. I like this movie a whole lot. What else you got?
I've got things, and then I have a question I'll wrap it up with. But the soundtrack
is fantastic.
Is fantastic. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It takes this movie to another level.
Yes. So there's Night Call, which opens it, which is, I think, fantastic by Kavinsky. I don't know how you say his name.
The soundtrack.
I had it before really? My iTunes got wiped out. But then you have like the real human being
the
song,
the theme of the movie, yeah.
Which I think is like very fitting because he's almost not a human being because he's just so disconnected and he's not a hero, and it's just this. It's juxtaposed, and that's cool. And the movie's very clever with this because Carey Mulligan, we talked about her husband. Was in jail for doing something shady,
yeah.
And he's getting out soon. And when he gets out and they have this welcoming party and Ryan Gosling's back and he's giving a speech, the song is called Under Your Spell. And like, those are the lyrics coming out when, like, you know, Ryan Gosling's character, the driver, starts to form this relationship with Carey Mulligan's character. And this guy comes back into her life and then she's right back to him.
Yeah.
And the song's Under Your Spell, like, oh, well, she's back. And I like that touch. And I also really like, one, this guy is Oscar Isaac is the father. I don't think we've said yet. And Oscar Isaac is a fantastic up-and-coming actor who is in Inside Llewyn Davis.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He's going to be in the new Star Wars movie that came out. He was in Ex Machina this year. He is just...
Oh, he was in Ex Machina.
He is picking fantastic roles and just knocking them out of the park. But like, I love his character. Is not a dick. You get the father coming into this triangle. Usually it's like a dick. This guy out of prison because he did harsh crimes. You expect like a thug gangster dickhead.
That you're not supposed to like.
And
but
he's
you
not.
Do like
and
him.
You do. Yeah. Yeah. Which makes it even more heartbreaking when you see like what happens at the pawn shop.
And what I love about that is, you know, it's one of my favorite things on another movie that didn't make my list. But
what movie
no
was
Country
that?
For Old Men.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when he dies... That's it. No fanfare. No zoom in. He gets shot through a window. You see it from a distance. Boom. Dead. That's it.
Yep.
Fucking done. Wrote enough. No more talking about it except when he tells her later. Yeah. I love when that happens. Like, it's not, I mean, it's a big thing that happens, but if that were to happen to me in real life, that's exactly how it would go down.
It's not big Hollywood fanfare.
Exactly.
And like,
it's just brutal
melodrama.
Honesty.
Yeah.
Like, just bam. That's it. Done.
It is.
I love that part. I love his death. It's fantastic.
Me too. And I just, yeah, his character was perfect. And I completely forgot he was in this movie. Him and Ron Perlman both. I forgot Ron Perlman was in this. And just, God.
I'm a big Ron Perlman fan. I almost remember everything I've seen Ron Perlman in.
I do too, which is like so weird why I forgot he was in this. But
his part in this is less than what he's normally involved.
Yeah,
well, I don't know.
I think he has like maybe 10 lines. Like he's not a huge part, but he's in is like really good.
I love his speech when he's talking about being a Jewish member of the mafia and how they still give him shit to this day.
I'm 59 years old. He comes to me. He still calls me kike to my face.
He grabs my fucking cheeks, Marty. I love that part, man.
Yeah. Yeah. He is fantastic. And that's another scene between him and Albert Brooks. And that's like, so... I will say, going into this the second time, that opening 10 minutes dragged for me.
Really?
I think the shine of like this new amazing thing kind of wore off in the first 10 minutes. And I was really worried. I was like, oh my God, I hope I don't watch this movie and like I'm not going to like it anymore. Because sometimes that happens. Like you'll see a movie and you're over the moon. you visited in like 5 years, and it's just like, oh man, that didn't age. But I think like one of the very next scenes after that heist is like Bryan Cranston, Albert Brooks, and Ron Perlman in the pizza shop. And I was immediately back on board. I was like, oh yeah, that's right. This is a great movie. Oh, I'm into this. And like, it brought me back in.
Bring those three big names out. It did. Yeah. It's crazy. You know, I'd never really heard of Nicholas Winding Refn before this movie.
Yeah.
And then the fact that he did get all these people, and this is a pretty small budget movie too.
Like, yeah.
That's what I like, that because that says a lot about him as a director, that these other people, I'm sure they took pay cuts from their normal salaries
just to work
on this movie with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you have a lot of big name people in this. Christina Hendricks is in it
for like almost nothing. She has like maybe two lines in the movie, and then she dies horribly violently. It's just
and Ryan
grotesque.
Gosling slaps the shit out of her before
he
that.
He does.
And that's, again, his brutal efficiency, I think, that's shining through.
Or lack of social nuance, because he doesn't understand what people or emotions are.
Who is this? What's the scumbag guy's name?
Who's the scumbag?
The guy that sets up the original, like, he's the one that...
Who writes fuck you on his hand.
Yeah.
I don't know his name. I can't think of it.
But I like him a lot in this movie. He really plays up that dirty, shitty fucking...
Who then gets the bullet.
He gets that, and then Albert Brooks fucking kills him in the pizza parlor with a fork.
To the eye.
Dude.
Fork to the eye.
Super brutal.
And then
super
just
awesome.
A straight knife jab in the throat. It's not like slitting the throat.
No.
Straight in.
And then he's like, clean this shit up. I've got to go clean up your fucking mess.
Yeah.
So awesome.
Now you know how it feels to clean up after somebody.
Yeah.
Your turn.
Yeah. It's so good, man.
I'm telling you, Albert Brooks is the VIP here. He is the winner.
He's really good in this movie.
I love him, but... So there was that, and like I said, it picked up, and then I got back into it, but those first 10 minutes had me worried. I was like,
That's crazy. The cinematography
wasn't working on me as much, because since then, like, we've had more Nicholas Winding Refn movies where I think he's advanced his cinematography even further. Not necessarily better movies, because
I don't
care for Only God Forgives.
I don't either, man.
I think it's a beautiful movie,
but it's god damn awful. It's not good. I agree with you there.
That was gonna be one of my questions: is what you think of that movie
like
coming
that.
Out? Okay,
I was very excited for it.
Me too,
because you know I love Gosling because of this and Refn. I thought their pairing could do no wrong, and you know I was proven wrong in that aspect.
Yeah,
I did not like that movie. I think people should watch it. Like, it is beautiful,
it's so gorgeous. Yeah,
it's got some serious issues, and I don't know if that's because it's set in a foreign land.
Could be,
and just because that's Nicholas doesn't understand how to. Because I mean, there's other movies set in the foreign land that do it great, like Lost in Translation.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else right now, but I know there are a lot of others that do it, and they don't suffer because of that, even though that's a primary aspect of the movie. But I think Only God Forgives really does. I think
it boils down to the story level, and then he
doesn't know what he wants to do with that movie.
You could say Drive is very minimalistic and
just
very plain, and like, this is my intention. Only God Forgives takes it down three fucking levels and is even more plain and even more simple and drags out even like if you thought there was no talking in Drive, there is even less in Only God Forgives.
It definitely drags, and there are some weird scenes where like the whole
like
karaoke
the mother loving shit
in
that movie is weird. The
whole prostitutes, the whole karaoke scene.
It,
where like it's the full song,
yeah.
Like, dude, there's just some really weird pacing things in that movie too. So,
yeah.
So that's I love Drive, not so much that one.
Yeah, that's I agree completely, and that's what I was curious about.
Valhalla Rising, that was the movie he did.
It's been
before.
On my Netflix queue forever, and I've
it's,
never.
It's
got
really
around
good.
To it.
It's a completely different movie from you know all because it's like Vikings.
Yeah. But, with Mads Mikkelsen, who I love.
But it's really good. You should really watch that one. It does come recommended. It's not one of my favorites, but it's a great like afternoon sort of like, hey, let's watch this, put it on thing. So it's a good riffing.
Also, I just looked down at my notes for this, and I definitely have the line from Albert Brooks that says, now it's your turn to clean up my mess, because it was just
it's
so
good,
good.
There's a lot of good lines in this.
There are. The first time Albert Brooks and the driver meet.
Yeah.
Is like another great line that just colors both characters. And Albert Brooks goes up to shake his hand and the driver pulls away.
Yeah.
And he says, my hands are dirty. And Albert Brooks just goes, so are mine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just like a very subtle thing. And it's like, that could be, I'm saying it now and it sounds like it could be like a cliched Hollywood beat, but it's done so fucking well.
The delivery makes that seem like you totally just did butcher it. But yes, in the movie, Albert Brooks doesn't. He kind of like subtly looks at his hand. And he's like, yeah, so are mine. I just butchered it too so that you don't feel bad.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. So I really only have one. I guess I could talk a little bit about the cinematography. And I think there is a lot that works. Cinematography wise, like I said, some of it didn't work on me as much this time, especially the driving scenes I don't think are well done, but the way he frames the people and the disconnection that comes through and just the framing is pretty brilliant. The first time the driver and Carey Mulligan's character meet, they go into their house with the kid, and the two, the driver and Carey Mulligan, never share a frame together. They very distinctly, like, you'll notice this, he'll walk out of frame right as she's walking in frame. They're constantly missing each other.
Even though they're in the same room.
Yes, and they're having a conversation the entire time. And it's like a 5-minute shot or a 5-minute compilation of shots. They are never sharing the frame until she's looking at the wall talking away from him. And you see his face in the mirror. And then even then in the mirror, you see the picture of Standard and Benicio, the father and the son, which is just so great and just shows like they are not on the same spectrum at all. They're so separated, and it's just like little touches like that, like I love finding in these films, and this film I think has a lot of that. And so that was one. And then I think I found like a Michael Myers Halloween reference possibly, because he's a stunt driver and he wears this mask.
Yeah,
that's like a bald head, very plain face, and it's kind of reminiscent. It's like very spooky. It's very creepy, very ominous.
It takes away his humanity even more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the way, so he puts on this mask when he's hunting down Nino, and the way the whole scene is shot, it's like a horror movie where he's lurching around the corner, out of frame, like very out of focus, just like Michael Myers. And when this is happening, if you look in the background, there's a lot of Halloween ads on the billboards and in the stores. And just like that blank dead mask face, it's shot like a serial killer. It's shot like a horror movie. And then the Halloween, I was like, well, I'm thinking of Michael Myers now. And he stalks him down like on the beach, just like Michael, and then holds him underwater and drowns him.
Awesome.
It's great. And it's
that shot where he's standing, where he's looking at Nino through the window of the
red and white tinted glass.
When it just kind of slowly pans in and zooms in on his face in that mask, dude, that's very unsettling.
It's horrifying. And I think there might be a nod there potentially, but
I had never picked up on that. I'll have to check that out when I rewatch it.
Yeah. So I found some things that I really liked, but I do have a question now as we're kind of winding this down. Watching this again, I am curious, and I'm sure you'll ask me the same question when we get to The Incredibles. Why is this on your top five? Because I feel like I still love this movie, even flaws, but I don't see why it would be over something else, because I feel like there's a lot of movies like this.
Well, and that's something that I'll ask to you after I answer this question. Just based on this movie, I want to know if you think it's better than Pan's Labyrinth. So I'll ask you that, I guess, before I get into your... You don't think so.
I don't.
You think Pan's Labyrinth should be higher
than this.
I think
Pan's Labyrinth is a better movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
and a more timeless movie. I think in 20 years, you'll still really like Pan's Labyrinth. You might not like Drive.
Okay. We'll see.
Yeah.
And I will admit, Drive is absolutely the newest movie on my list.
Yes.
It is the freshest. For me, you know, movies, games, everything is subjective. And I really can't explain to you why this movie resonates with me. But something about it just does hook me.
Okay.
And it draws me in. And you said that you had a problem with the first 10 minutes watching it this second time. And that just blows me away, because those first 10 minutes are some of my favorite parts of this movie, man. I love that opening aspect where he's talking. He's like, you get 2 minutes. Or I think it's 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Anything that happens on a minute on either side of that, you're on your own. Not my problem.
I only need four.
I don't know, man. I can't explain it. You have a problem with it, but I really like Ryan Gosling's performance in this movie.
Well, I just don't think it informs anything in the movie. I don't think it informs the characters. I don't think it really informs anything. It doesn't progress the story. Like, it literally, like, this scene has nothing to do with the rest of the movie, and it's not exciting either. It's not like a James Bond cold opening where you're like, fucking James Bond's back because it's blowing shit up and there's this. It is just a kind of somber, silent way to open the movie that doesn't tie into the rest of the movie. But that's just me.
Yeah, and again, it is subjective.
Yeah.
I can't really pinpoint what it is. There's a lot of things I like about it. I like all the big names that do have these great performances in this small movie that... I love the music. I think the music really, like, I can't stress enough how much...
The music is so good.
And from talking to other friends of mine that have seen this movie, the music is either... It's a love-hate thing. I know people that hate this movie just because of the music. They don't like the music. The music grates on them. But for me, it's like this perfect mix. Like, everything to me works in this movie. Like, I don't... Okay. I've seen it probably 8-9 times at this point.
Yeah.
And I still enjoy it. So it will be interesting to see down the road where I do end up placing it. But it is a very close fifth and fourth for me with Pan's Labyrinth and Drive. But I think Drive is better just on my enjoyment factor. Okay. I do agree Pan's Labyrinth is probably more timeless just because of fairy tale aspect of Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
And the more practical effects, I think, will give it a lot of life.
I think so. And you say Drive is timeless, but I don't think it is.
No,
as
I don't
much.
Think Drive is as timeless as Pan's Labyrinth.
You said, like, you can't place the time, but it's like I get a clear 80s, 90s vibe.
Yeah,
from Drive.
I mean, it definitely has that, but it's very ambiguous.
I think there's a line in the movie that is meant to be self-reflective, and I love this in movies. Albert Brooks's character works on kind of the Hollywood movies and the stunt drivers, and he says, they used to make these long, slow European movies. You know, some called it art. I thought it was shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, I think that's kind of talking about Drive and the pacing. It's like a return to form. But, like, you know, Albert Brooks people are out there. Like, some people just think it's shit. And I'm not one of those people. I just, like, I don't know. I would pick Pan's Labyrinth.
Okay. That's cool, man. But yeah, exactly. That's why we do this. Okay. Okay, so... Was any aspect of this a grind for you? I guess let's end on that question.
The first 10 minutes, and that was it.
That was it? Okay.
That was it.
So, let's move the hell on, man. Let's perk this up. Let's get some life in this. Number four we'll movie see. Was...
The Incredibles.
Yes, a movie.
God, I can't believe we're talking about Drive and Incredibles in
the
same
fucking
podcast.
Episode.
Yeah,
so this is a big disconnect. So tell me a little bit about The Incredibles. I'll let you set this up a bit, then I'll start jumping in.
So The Incredibles is about superheroes, specifically superheroes who the world starts to turn on them, a la Watchmen, I think is where they really borrowed from the comics, not the movie. But essentially superheroes are starting to be held accountable for their actions. Mr. Incredible, famously saved a person and in the process ended up hurting his neck a little bit. I don't want to say breaking it cause it's a Pixar movie. He doesn't break a neck, but he roughs up a guy he's saving. The guy sues and the government starts to lock down superheroes. So what happens is superheroes aren't allowed to be superheroes anymore. And it's how a superhero and his family try to deal with it.
In the modern
times, yeah.
So I guess my first question for you, and you might not know this, but you might.
I might.
But what came first, The Incredibles or Marvel's Civil War?
Civil War... When was Incredibles out? Was it 2000?
Incredibles was pretty early. It was after Toy Story 2.
College, so it must have been like 2009, 2008, 2009, I would imagine it was. I think Civil War was 2007. I think Civil War was out first.
I should have probably looked and then asked you this question. I thought Incredibles was first. But it's weird how similar that they are.
The Registration Act. Yeah. Well, I think they're both, and this is where it's kind of irrelevant because I think they both borrow heavily from Watchmen, which was in like the 90s that the comic came out. So It's the same. It's the superhero registration stuff. Just superheroes need to be held accountable. They can't just go on doing whatever they want. The government needs to get involved and regulate things.
Which is also something I think, from what I've learned, is going to be happening in the Batman vs. Superman movie coming up.
Yes.
We'll get into that at some point.
Which I'm very disappointed that it's coming out so close to Civil War, because it's just going to be like, I don't need to see two movies dealing with the same themes together.
We're going to break a tangent here because that's what we do. I don't know if the Superman aspect was originally planned or if so many people were pissed at the way the Zod fight happened.
I think it was the second.
I think so too, that he had to retcon and explain why that was happening. And so that's why
Superman didn't save anybody. That Superman was too busy fighting because Zod touched his fucking mother.
What did you think about Superman Returns?
I love Superman Returns.
You're the only other person. That was another high five, by the way. I fucking love that movie.
And this is where we'll get a lot of dissent from the crowd. But like, Superman Returns is the perfect Superman movie.
It is the best Superman movie.
It is.
And I'm a giant Superman fanboy. I fucking love Superman.
I'm not as crazy about Superman, but like, I know how Superman should be, and Man of Steel was not that. Brandon Routh had
it down. Man of Steel was fun. It was fun.
It was fun up until
point. There
was
some cool things happening. I liked a lot of the fight scenes. But yeah, Brandon Routh was Superman. That was the best interpretation. His Clark Kent was fantastic too. But
yes.
So we're talking about superheroes. Let me bring this back to The Incredibles. So this movie, it's not... Physically, it's not as timeless as Drive. It's very obviously 50s.
It's
influence.
Yeah, it's very retro. It has a very retro vibe to it.
Not only is it superheroes,
it's the jazzy horns.
There's a
lot
of spy / 007 influence in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, not only is it superheroes, there's this whole espionage thing going on. And when the superheroes have to go undercover, Mr. Incredible and Frozone do a lot of superheroing under the aid of darkness, and they're wearing just like ski masks
they're rescuing people from fires, which was like a big fucking thing. 2005 is when this movie came out, so it might have beat Civil War.
I think it was
2005.
I really think it did.
Now that you, because it was right around the time Spider-Man 2 came out
with all the
fucking burning building, where like Spider-Man is not Spider-Man. He's not going to use his powers. He's going to run into a burning building and save people. And it was so close to Incredibles. I was like, is this a fucking year? The burning buildings?
It's like, yeah,
but that's what it was. It was 2005. I know for sure. Now
I love that 50s vibe. They really capture that. I love that music.
The soundtrack is so good. It's Michael Giacchino.
I don't know.
I don't know how to pronounce, but he's always with J.J. Abrams. He does those soundtracks.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's that jazzy. It just, everything punctuates perfectly based on the music. And it sets that tone and brings you into that 50s nostalgia area-esque feel. I love that. So I have the Civil War thing. I love the way that they do get rid of them with the overbearing legality.
Yeah.
And, it's all in sort of a flashback thing. Mr. Incredible is, he's in court and he's upset that he's like, I saved your life. What are you doing, man? He's like, that was my life to take. And this, for a Disney Pixar movie, this is a pretty dark movie at points.
Yeah.
People die in this movie. A lot of people die. Granted, it is henchmen a lot of times, but there are people dying. Superheroes die too.
And it's very adult themes. Yeah. Like, do you think a kid is going to fucking hear any of this government talk? Their eyes are going to glaze over and
they
wait till
the perfect pretty colors. But I like that. And there's this jarring sort of jump to reality where you see Mr. Incredible now working in an insurance office. And he is this massive man.
All the bright colors are completely saturated. The office is white and gray.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he's sitting there and you can just get that he's miserable. And he's this massive hulking figure crammed into this tiny cubicle and this tiny desk. And, he's put on a paunch, which I like, that shows the realism. Like, because
he's just out of shape. He's not practicing. He's not even trying anymore.
That mundaneness is amazing.
They
really capture that and show just how bored and over life he is. And He goes through a sort of a midlife crisis throughout the course of this movie, because he wants to superhero. That's what he likes doing. And you know, he goes out once a week with Frozone, who's voiced by the amazing Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Nails this role so great. And, you know, once a week he tells his wife, the lovely Elastigirl, who I have a bit of a digital crush on, I will say. I swoon for Elastigirl a little bit.
I saw that. Yeah. I saw the swoon Elastigirl heart on your notes.
She's got my thing. I like Elastigirl. And she is voiced by, I can't remember her name. But
Holly Hunter.
Is it Holly Hunter?
Holly Hunter.
And she has that sort of slight lisp going.
Yeah. But well, she absolutely does.
It's fantastic. I love her. And, you know, she's just trying to be the housewife at this point. She's accepted.
She's holding it all together.
Yeah, she's accepted that, you know, okay, we can't do this anymore. But because of the fact that she's not a big, strong man, it really doesn't affect her. Plus, she does have three kids now with Bob that she's trying to raise.
Her focus has completely shifted, whereas Bob is still holding on to the past and lingering and not accepting the now, which is a big theme that comes up.
And they get in fights because their children also have superpowers. The son is very fast. His name is Dash. Very fitting.
Who is pushing the boundaries and wants to use his superpowers, much like Bob.
Yeah, and he encourages it.
Yeah.
Because he loves the superhero aspect. So, and of course the mom knows that they can't do that. It's illegal. They imply that they've had to move many times based on either Dash's outtakes or Bob's, and they're always getting in trouble in that way. And then they have the older daughter, Violet, who is very, emo, I guess. Yeah. She's not so goth, but she is very awkward.
Yeah.
And her power is she can go invisible and also make force fields.
Mm-hmm.
Bob is your generic
Invisible Woman.
Yeah.
Mrs. Fantastic.
Yeah, it does have a very Fantastic Four vibe. I think this movie is way better Fantastic Four than has ever been done. And
it's not even a competition.
The Fantastic Four, even in the comics, I don't like them. I find them very boring and formulaic. And But The Incredibles, it's so fresh. And I wrote it down here at some point. They combine the powers for their teamwork. Then it really drives the point that they are stronger together than apart. Because Bob's big thing is that he wants to do it all alone so that he doesn't have to worry about the others getting hurt or possibly dying. Because that's his biggest worry. He wants to work alone so that he doesn't have to worry about that. The villain in the movie, they show him as a kid. He's Mr. Incredible's biggest fan, and he wants to work with him, and Mr. Incredible keeps shoving him off and saying, no, I work alone, kid, leave me alone.
And creates a villain, which is very just ripped straight from comics. This is how most villains are formed, because of the superheroes.
They want to best their previous idols, which is exactly what happens here. And that character is voiced by the fantastic Jason Lee.
Yeah.
I went through a very big Jason Lee phase, I should say. And this movie came out like right in the middle of it. And so that was one of my biggest reasons for seeing it anyways. But yeah, man, with Pixar movies, a lot of it's all about the little things. They nail a lot of little things that you take for granted in a lot of other movies. I like when Mr. Incredible comes home from his day at the office, he steps on the skateboard and falls and grabs the car and steadies himself. And in that instant, he breaks the car just enough to where the door doesn't shut anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that upsets him. So he keeps trying to shut the door, and then the glass breaks, and he's so defeated and he can't fix it. He can't afford to get it replaced because he works this really ridiculous 9-to-5 job for this tiny little man who's miserable and treats him like shit. And you kind of get a Napoleon complex from that guy. So,
and that's a smart scene, because that's the start of a joke that pays off two more times in the movie. And that's why I really like this movie.
Are you talking about the little kid?
Yeah, because the kid sees, like, I think he picks up the car in frustration, and the kid just, like, pops his bubble gum. And then, like, later on, the same thing happens, but, like, Bob Parr does not react. He just shuts the door and, like, kind of slinks off. And then he sees the kid, and he's like, what are you waiting for? And the kid's just like, I don't know. Something incredible.
Yeah.
And it's just, and like, that's like, not only is that thematically deep and resonating to the character itself, but like, it's a callback. And then even at the end, like, you have the kid seeing like the plane crash and like the whole family like surviving in the bubble. And he goes, that was incredible. Or that was freaking amazing.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, you're right. It is the small details and the attention that they pay attention to that they bring it back. And they really just...
They also
got their shit on lockdown.
Dude, they're really good at foreshadowing. You know, at one point, early on when he catches the bad guy in the flashback aspect, he's bragging about it later and even reminiscing with a completely different one with Frozen. They talk about, I caught him monologuing. And then later on, Jason Lee's villain character is starting to monologue and almost gets caught off guard and brings that back. He's like, you almost caught me monologuing.
Yeah. But or you could go the whole capes route where like the designer is like talking about no capes.
And she gives all these reasons why they show all these instances of superheroes,
which is also
dying.
Super dark.
Yeah. They die.
I think a superhero gets caught in an airplane propeller. Yep. Right. Or a tornado.
Yeah, dude. All these crazy things happen. And that eventually becomes the downfall of Jason Lee's villainous character. He gets caught in his own jet's turbine because of his cape.
Yeah.
So it's all these great little things, these little callbacks, all these little touches that happen. A lot of it plays into effect when the teamwork really starts to come in. Because at one point, Violet makes this force field around her and Dash. And then Dash, using his super speed, rolls it away and they get away from the bad guys and they're almost really invincible in that teamwork aspect because she has the force field and he's moving it.
The last third of this movie lets them play with their powers and interact with each other, and that is something that never happens in the Fantastic Four movies, which I think the entire arc of the second movie is we need to work as a team and then to fight Galactus. Johnny Torch just fucking does everything himself anyway.
Yeah.
So they completely shit the bed in that. They don't listen to that. So, yeah, you're right.
The action scenes are fantastic in this movie.
It's still really a lot of fun.
Yeah. This is a bright, colorful movie. For as dark as it can be, there's a lot of great things happening in it. I did write out this note, and I will point it out. They do focus on that mom butt in one scene.
They do. She looks at her reflection at one point.
Yeah, she sees it, and she's got a big old butt, and I really like that. I really, again, you know, I keep coming back to these little things. There's this part where Dash is trying to escape from the villains and he's running as fast as he can and he comes upon this lake and he closes his eyes and then he looks down and he sees that he's running on water. He's running so fast and he just lets out this little sort of cocky giggle.
I would even rewind before that. There are two things I really love about that is I think Helen's talking to Dash and Violet when they're on the island, and she says something to the effect of, like, these are not the bad guys you see on TV. They will hurt kids. And, like, just something like that, real and dark, never comes across in a Disney movie, ever.
That's a crazy one,
man. And then, like, there's also a line where she says to Dash, I want you to run as fast as you can. And he just lights up, like, finally,
as fast as I can.
Yeah. And it's, like, it's a great character moment for both of them, and...
So, I wrote down here, too. I had big smiles during this movie, man. I was giddy. I loved it. I was having fun this whole time.
It is just pure joy.
It's a great movie. Like,
I feel much better about this choice than I did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
The pacing is fantastic. This movie is almost 2 hours long. At no point does it feel like that. It doesn't drag. It doesn't get boring. It's fun throughout. It's just good, man. Like, it's very well picked. I would agree with it that it's number four.
Awesome.
I like when they're coming into the city to save the day at the end, and they land this RV, and they're all in the family, and Bob and Helen are having these driving directions in this crazy midst of, like, they're going, like, 100 miles an hour in this thing. Yeah. They're like, do I take the 7 exit? I got to get downtown quick. And she's like, no, don't take the 7. And he swerves off, and they're... It's what you would imagine a family arguing about in a car, except that they're going 100 miles an hour and they're superheroes doing it.
Yeah.
Like, I have seen these arguments in my own car with my family. It's perfect. They really nailed everything in this movie.
Yeah.
And I would, my last point here is, I think this is the best Pixar movie. For me,
I'm trying to think through.
I like Finding Nemo a lot.
That's not one of my favorites.
I like that one a lot, but I think this is hands down the best one. It does everything perfect. I mean, I know Toy Story is a lot of people's. I think it's more for nostalgia.
Yeah.
And because it was kind of the first of that kind. Toy Story is a great movie.
It's on my list of top five favorites, so obviously it's my favorite Pixar too. I can't think of what even comes close. Because it's literally like Incredibles, and then everything else is like really good, not great.
Yeah.
Like, I really like a lot of Pixar stuff.
Watching this again, I am very excited for Incredibles 2 as well. I'm so excited. So I hope they don't sophomore slump it.
I think there's been time enough. Yeah. Because Brad Bird has always said, like, I don't want to do Incredibles 2 until I have the perfect idea.
I'm curious to see what they're going to do with it. If it's going to be... If everybody's going to be grown up more, if Dash is going to be a teenager now, things of that. Is Jack-Jack, who recently discovered his powers...
I would imagine we're
going
to skip forward in time.
I would have to imagine,
and
too.
And Jack-Jack's going to be like the age of Dash or Violet in this one. But even, I will point out this Easter egg in case you didn't guess. The Underminer at the end of the movie is a very direct reference to Mole Man.
Yeah.
Who was the Fantastic Four's first villain.
Yeah.
And it's almost shot for shot like...
The way
how
he shows up?
Yeah.
Wow.
It is very similar.
That's a nice little touch. I liked it. I liked all the character names. The Underminer. What is the Mime Bomb guy? Bomb Voyage.
Bomb Voyage.
It's also inventive and just fun. Frozone.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. This movie is fun. I highly recommend it to anybody watching if somehow you have not seen The Incredibles, especially if you have children.
Yes.
Watch The Incredibles.
Absolutely.
You will not be disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, it's 2 hours of your kids being enwrapped in something.
It's a movie I could easily recommend to anybody. Because even if you don't love it as much as I do, you're going to like it.
I do think it's better than Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. So.
I do too. Yeah. I really regret putting Kiss Kiss Bang Bang on my list.
You had to do something.
I know.
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is not a bad movie to revisit that. But Incredibles is better. So, I mean, right now, I'm agreeing with you.
Well,
we're stepping up. So
good. We'll see.
So that's really all I have to say about it.
I don't know if I have much to say. It's great. And like, unless you want to do Chris Farley show where I just tell you like scenes and quote lines,
awesome.
Like that's all I could do for it. It's really good. It's
actually
they're both really good movies. Let me point that out because I expressed some criticisms on Drive.
Which
they're both
fun, yeah.
really good movies. Yeah.
You should not take Ryan's word. You should watch Drive for yourself, everybody, and then let us know
that's true.
Who's more right.
You might not like Drive, though. I think Drive is definitely more...
It's definitely more the acquired taste. Not even acquired.
It's not controversial. What is the word? What is that fucking word that is escaping both of our minds right
know.
Now?
The shit I always give Andrew about it is that he doesn't like it because he lacks an appreciation for subtlety. I don't think that's really right. concerning Drive.
That is pretty demeaning.
But there are some subtle things in this movie and Drive that I think some people who are just trying to watch a film won't grab. So, especially, like you said, a lot of the cinematography, the way that they are never in the same shot when they first meet, things like that, are really they're showing, not telling. That.
Yes.
So there's a lot of that in Drive, which turns a lot of people off. Mm-hmm. So. Be warned, but
it's an art house film.
Very.
Don't
very
go in expecting an action movie, which I think it was advertised originally
as
an
action
movie.
And I think
that's
probably as well, so turn other people off. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's it. That's episode 5, the number 4 movies.
Yeah. So as always, thank you so much for joining us. This has been The Experience Grind with
Kyle
and Ryan. You can come over to experiencegrind.com, check us out, like us on Facebook, iTunes, write us a review. That's fine. You can find us at, you can email us at experiencegrindpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, thank you so much, Kyle, for hosting.
Thank you for also hosting, Ryan. It's always a pleasure, man. I love talking with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is my favorite part of the week, man.
Me too.
So check us out. Give us a like. Tell us what we got right, what we got wrong. We want to hear from you. So thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah.